Ipsay leads the way.
Ipsay.
One system, personnel, and pay.
Ipsay.
21st century.
Ipsay.
Total force visibility. Online.
Online.
Mobile.
Mobile.
Integrated.
Integrated.
Motivated.
Motivated.
Right soldier, right job, right on time.
24/7.
Hello, and welcome to the Ipsay podcast. I'm joined today by our special guests, Colonel Greg Johnson, Major Lee Backrars, Major Josh Herr, and Chief Lionel Blair. Our topic today is change management. The U.S. Army wants to fundamentally change the culture and practices of human resources to that of talent management. Part of the challenge is convincing three separate components that a system they'd never heard of before is better than what they've grown accustomed to using. And that system is IPSAE, the Integrated Personnel and Pay System Army. Sir, I'm going to go over and pass it off to you and let you start off our round-robin discussion today. I know we've got a lot to cover.
Hey, appreciate that, Frank. Excited to be back on the podcast show here with the some pretty esteemed guests, if I do say so myself. Pretty excited to have these three gentlemen with us to talk a little bit about change management, what we're doing in IPSAE, and really the direction, strategy, et cetera, that we're headed in. Two of the gentlemen are from the National Guard. And I thought it was important to have them come on the podcast today to talk, a little bit about their experiences and getting released to the National Guard and really what that journey was like over the last, 4 or 5 years. Major Backlars is on my team, sitting on the program, and he's really in charge of sustainment for Release 2. So he's an active duty officer, but he's also tied to the National Guard and overseeing kind of how we upgrade and improve Release 2 now that it's fully fielded to the Guard. So let's pass it over to these guys to introduce themselves real quick up front, and then we can jump into some discussion and questions. Lee, do you want to introduce yourself real quick?
Yes, sir. For the group, Major Lee Backlars, as boss said, joined the team, the IPSAE team, in the summer of 2018, and then quickly thereafter joined the R2 team when we were fielded in Pennsylvania during the limited user test. And then obviously we moved on to the other fielding groups and we got fully implemented in March of 2020. So just this year. So I have a great affinity for Major Josh Herr, who's from Pennsylvania. And then obviously Lionel Blair, Chief Blair from Virginia, definitely been in the fight from Jump Street. And we work hand in hand together daily to continue to refine as we go forward. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Lee. Hey, Josh, why don't you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, sir. Major Josh Herr. I'm a signal officer from Pennsylvania. For the past few years, I was the readiness division chief and the installation coordinator for the fielding of IPSAE in Pennsylvania. And now I'm currently the deputy G1 for the state of Pennsylvania.
Great. Short and to the point. Chief Blair.
Sir. Thank you. Mr. Blair, I'm the chief of the HR systems branch for the Virginia Guard. I got about 20 years of service. Prior to IPSAE conversion, I was in the CIFPERS world since about 2013, and I ran point for converting from CIFPERS to IPSAE. That's all I got, sir.
Yeah, no, thanks. Thanks for introducing yourselves, gentlemen. Just up front, a lot of respect for the three gentlemen that are on with me today. I generally tell folks that IPSAE doesn't really happen without Josh Herr and Lionel Blair. And I've told that to the chief of staff of the Army. Those two gentlemen, I think, preponderance of our success rests with those two gentlemen in our Release 2 fielding in both of those states, but also just in the final preparations and finishing functionality in our Release 2 IPSAE delivery. So I'll probably talk a little bit about that as we go along. We talk about what we went through to get to a fielding decision with Pennsylvania. And then the second state in the system was Virginia. Lucky for us, those two are real close to the DC area. So it was easy for our team to get to those two states as we as we finished release two and then delivered it to them and their states. And then Lee is just a tremendous asset focusing on our sustainment operations. But, you know, ultimately, you can define all three of these gentlemen as change agents. They happen to be mid-grade tier for our Army, right? You know, a chief warrant officer, a couple of majors, right? So those are the folks that generally do all your hard work for units and synchronize units, et cetera. But, you know, all three of them have kind of that special quality that was open to change right from the very beginning. You know, hey, how do we better our processes? How do we better our system? How do we improve our system and our organizations? A lot of times that's, you know, I don't know, maybe you're just born with that kind of outlook and feeling, but those three definitely epitomize what you want in a change agent, and they're really important to the program and for our Army to get IPSA done. So, you know, with that introduction, Frank, you have something to kick us off with?
So we know that IPSA took a COTR approach to change management. And when we say COTR, we're talking about the change management methodology of John COTR, who's fairly famous and influential in the management change management industry. And the program used four pillars: a change strategy, demonstrated change leadership, stakeholder engagement and analysis, and strategic communications. So we'll talk about that throughout the program. Sir, can you start us off by talking about what the program needed to do in order to secure support from Army senior leaders? Because my understanding is that's one of the things that help the program be successful.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. I think it's a pretty good question. You know, I was at the Army War College a couple of years ago in 2016, and you know, one of the things that they had us read was John COTR. You know, I'd been exposed to a lot of his change management stuff previous to the War College, but you know, the War College made it a point to have folks read through and understand. You know, his stage processes on how do you create major change. And so that, you know, for me, that was kind of neat to see that at the War College. And then, you know, as I transitioned to this IPSA job, you know, here you are looking at, you know, one of the biggest change management, you know, scenarios that I think the Army has seen, is certainly in the HR community, the largest change management effort that we've probably ever undertaken. You know, and the first pieces of that kind of COTR process is, you know, you got to create a sense of urgency. You got to create a guiding coalition, and you got to develop a vision and a strategy, right? That was kind of that first pillar of stuff that he talks about, that you need to build this kind of major change moving forward. And for us, you know, a lot of that rested solely with General McConville. He was the G1 in 2016. And he was really underwriting and pushing that we need to modernize our HR environment, our systems, our processes, and move it to a talent management system. So move HR, which is essentially, you know, nested in this 1940s industrial-based lockstep. You know, you produce people like MOSs and grades, and that's the job they do. To more of a, hey, do I understand skills and talents? And then utilizing people, you know, in that way. So really a lot of that upfront stuff, the baseline, hey, this is the vision. And then I'm going to underwrite the coalition, and then driving the sense of urgency was really General McConville's doing. He kind of did all that himself, laid it out, and then really pushed us on the team to get out and do the work to modernize the HR in the Army and make it a talent management system. So I, you know, part of that was already there. He was saying, do this. I think from my perspective, you know, as we started to build some of the capability over time, and then we brought folks from the Guard in to kind of talk where we're at, he pushed us even harder. So, you know, you tend to do well when you get some short-term wins, and you start to really get broad-based action, you know, through your work. And that's kind of what we ended up doing. So, I mean, if you're a traditionalist and you go read Cotter's book, you'll see we kind of walked right down these steps that he highlights in the book to create some change. So, you know, but it all started with General McConville and his vision, and then really pushing us to do the work. A lot of the nuts and bolts and details, were all tied, you know, to us pulling in guys like, you know, Josh and Chief, and then others from the team. So, yeah, I think that's it. You know, Josh, from your perspective sitting in Pennsylvania, I mean, how did you see some of that kind of play out?
Sir, we started this years and years ago when we made an agreement with, Colonel McNulty and, who was your predecessor? I forget his name off the top of my head.
Yeah, Rob Parsons.
Yeah, Colonel Parsons as well. You know, they came up to Pennsylvania back in, you know, 2016, and Colonel McHugh, our current chief of staff, was the G1 back then. You know, we agreed that we would play ball and do this endeavor together. It's a different level of diplomacy, I think, than maybe the program was used to dealing with the state, you know, getting our input, getting us comfortable. But I think it was great working together, you know, with the active component, working with us going first. And, you know, we worked through the challenges and got to, you know, October of 2018, where we thought we were ready, and then some things came to light and everybody agreed we're not there yet. And then finally things shifted one last time till January of 2019, when we were fully ready to go. Were we fully comfortable? No, but we were ready to go. And I think everyone agreed we were as far as we could go without being transactional.
Yeah. Well, comfort, you know, I think we'll probably touch upon that, you know, how comfortable are people with change? I mean, that's probably one of the biggest obstacles is making people comfortable and moving forward. You know, I'm asked a lot, you know, hey, why did we start, with the National Guard? We get that a lot. And you know, you kind of highlighted, you know, what is that, 2014 or 15? When these two active duty colonels show up and say, hey, Pennsylvania, you want to be the first state, to roll this new capability out. You know, number one, it's just like props to the state of Pennsylvania for just taking it on. A lot of places would say no. But really for me and doing the National Guard first, it's like, you know, you guys were all in these separate systems, SIDPERS, which is, you know, kind of mid-80s technology, and each state and territory was different. And it's like, you know, National Guard was probably our hardest nut to crack, because you know, each state's kind of doing things a little differently. Each state had a different database. Each state has different perspectives. You know, we had to kind of try and match that up, get to a baseline and essay and field it. So I feel like a lot of the hard work up front was done as we got the whole guard, you know, into the system. So, you know, Chief Blair, you know, what do you think? You're sitting in Virginia, kind of watching Pennsylvania. And then I know at some point in 2017, you ended up, you know, jumping all the time into our sessions. You know, what did you see from the state of Virginia's perspective?
Yes, sir. So I'm fortunate enough to be a part of a group called the MSAG, which is a bunch of warrant officers that are committed to HR systems and HR change. And we advise the colonels that talk through NGPG1. I met Major Hurd through the MSAG years ago, and I kind of watched his trajectory and building. And really the program asked me to go second. I didn't know how I felt about it at first, but I also realized at that moment that this is kind of the moment to either embrace change or give it off to someone else to do. I asked my NCOs back in Virginia how they felt, because they know it's going to be a heavy lift, and they wanted to take on the challenge with us, so we went ahead and said, yeah, sign us up for number two.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from our perspective, that was a pretty positive, you know, move in that direction. And you mentioned the MSAG. I know as I got into the program in 2016, you know, I was introduced to the group, which, you know, to me just seemed, you know, if I'm being candid, right? It was like a bunch of technical, kind of grumpy guys and gals that really knew what they were doing. But in my mind, I very quickly was like, wow, this is a group that we really need to bring into this discussion on how do we shape functionality and how do we shape it, say, moving forward. And I know, you know, from my perspective, we definitely engaged that group very directly and very aggressively to get feedback and to get ideas and to help shape, you know, what we delivered. So I don't know, Josh, you're part of that group too. I mean, what else do you think tied to the MSTAG was beneficial early on?
My first interaction was, I think I went to Little Rock, Arkansas, and I think the IPSA program was there as well. And, you know, Pennsylvania 4 or 5 years ago, we weren't on the national stage like we are today, you know, just with relationships and interactions. So my predecessor was a captain. I was a captain when I started this job, so I wasn't a representative on the inner circles of the MSTAG. So I ended up down in Little Rock, Arkansas. And at first, like you just mentioned, encountered a fair amount of resistance of one. Why was Pennsylvania selected, as they're not a MSTAG state or on the national stage of we'll do this? You know, I think it was Oregon who was the, you know, the predecessor's volunteer. So here we are out of the blue being selected. And, you know, people had a mixed opinion that we were strictly selected based off geography and relationships. But in return, you know, they wanted a big, large state that was local to the DC area, which we were. You know, assigned strength at the time, about 15,000 division headquarters, 5 BCT level organizations, and some TDAs. So from there, you know, once we got past the initial friction, you know, we definitely started to work together. And, you know, our state, you know, went all in with the MSTAG, you know, EC and other folks. And we got help from all over the place, you know, beyond Chief Blair, you know, Tennessee, Kentucky, Michigan, you know, those folks, Massachusetts. All came, and anytime we needed them, spent their own time and energy to come help the program and the state of Pennsylvania and whatever we asked for them. So, you know, though we went first, you know, it was team effort from a lot of states around the country, you know, time away from their family, volunteering to come help us for a week or a month, you know, whatever it took. It's a user juries that we held, you know, folks traveling in from Guam to come see the system and to ask us questions and provide feedback of how they do things. Because as you said in the beginning, sir, a lot of states do a lot of things differently. We all had to come together on certain items to standardize them, which we've never done in the past. So, but yeah, tons of help from those guys. Once we got up and running, I still stay in touch with those folks today, even though I interchanged jobs and moved on, but you know, made some long-term friends through this endeavor.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, walking into this, you know, I'm an active duty guy, coming out of the War College, coming into this program, really landing at a point where we were doing the critical design review for release 2 in that 2016 timeframe, yet then being, you know, engaged with these different groups, right? The MSTAG, state leadership, there's another group called the MILPAG, really being exposed for the first time some of these organizations in the National Guard and how the National Guard operates. And the task was really, hey, how do you kind of streamline an approach to finalizing the design and then getting it going? And then, you know, thinking through business processes, et cetera. Like, you know, the program likes to say, hey, we in 2014-15, we went through about 150 Army BPs, business processes, and then utilizing PeopleSoft, the system IPSA, we're going to streamline it into about 50 business processes, run them roughly the same. But, you know, as I got in the program in 16 and we started talking to these different groups in different states, we, you know, I noticed, hey, there's definitely some disagreements. You know, how do you do semi-specialized promotions? You know, how do you run your FedRec stuff up through states, up to the NGB and then into the Pentagon? You know, you name it, how some of the in-strength stuff was working. Assignments, et cetera, right? It was all different angles, you know, not some, you know, one universal opinion, I guess is the softest I could put it. And I know as we got, you know, closer to, hey, we're going to do some big tests, I know I asked the program, hey, let's go do kind of a level setting event, you know, out in Oklahoma City with all the MSTAG members, you know, and I think that was like your annual, was that like your annual conference, Chief?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, hey, let's co-opt this MSTAG national conference where you got all the smartest technical folks and let's run through these business processes and see if we can get to, you know, a pretty good understanding of where we're headed. And, you know, that event was just, you know, candidly, both you gentlemen were there. Lee, I think you were there too for some of that. You know, it was pretty interesting. We got a lot of fastballs high and tight, couple of F-bombs here and there, right? Some pretty angry people at times, but then also, you know, after you get through some of that, you know, hey, what direction do we need to go? And for me, that event was like a seminal event to our success. It's like we had to do that to kind of streamline where we're headed. You know, Chief, what was your impressions of that event? And you can be honest here, right? We're chatting about our path.
Well, sir, I think you're kind of bridging a couple things. So ultimately, the MSTAG is trying to safeguard the chaos, right? We're trying to take care of 350,000 bubbles across the 54, and someone's giving us another system, another change. And our job, really, especially in our states, we answer our adjutant generals about readiness, strength, everything in our state. So we're trying to make sure we take the time and do the due diligence before we receive the next system change or the next product. So there's definitely some emotions there, right? People have gone through a lot of changes over their military career. And we get to talk to the people that are bringing it to us. So we want to make sure, you know, all your T's are crossed and I's are dotted. And I think that was just evident in the room. You saw the passion. But at the end of it, I think we came out, you know, everyone ready to tackle it together. And it's still evidence today. We have a Google Notes thing with the 54. Where we talk every day when we run into new issues and problems. And we have a lot of synergy from all those events.
Yeah. So if I was to be kind of nerdy, Chief, I'd be like, hey, you know, Cotter says about creating a guiding coalition. You know, I would be like, hey, this team, this MSTAG team, you know, for me, it was about, hey, how do we get these guys and gals buy in to where we're headed? Because, you know, you guys have so much influence inside your states. So I was like, if we get folks helping us do the work versus, you know, some outside active duty entity doing the work, then I was like, hey, we're gonna have much better chance for success. And then we're going to help shape this the way it really needs to be. Since you guys are the technical experts, you kind of, for the most part, know what, you know, what we should be doing. You know, so that's interesting that you say that. So that even coming out of that event, you know, there was some tangible benefits. You know, Josh, what do you think? I know you were at the event, and then obviously we ended up in the SAT. You know, it seems like a deployment event up in Pennsylvania as we went into our systems acceptance test and a limited user test in Pennsylvania.
I agree with what you said. You know, I think you walked out of there with some more allies. But I think you also walked out of there with some folks who are still skeptical, you know, and some of those folks were of the mindset, I'll believe it when, you know, Chief Blair and Major Herr have it and I'm forced, you know what I mean? So some of those folks, until we were operational and he was operational and it was like, this thing's really coming, like I have to get on board because the boats leave without me. It took a little more time for some of them. But I think, you know, a lot of people when they, you know, sat through Vente's training sessions and saw the UPKs and the development, you know, some people were definitely throwing rocks, you know what I mean? And I think, you know, Blair and I and a lot of other folks were pretty quick to say, you know, don't throw rocks, help. If you think you can make this better, you know, join up and help us out. And I think, you know, you gained a lot of people who were willing to do that from that event as well.
Yeah. Well, and I'm okay too, getting hit with a few rocks. You know, this is, you know, there's a, if you watch the Moneyball movie, you know, there's a point where Brad Pitt, you know, the good looking Billy Bean is talking to the owner of the Red Sox and he's you know, the Red Sox guy is like, hey, you know, those that are changing everything, you know, they're going to get bloody. So if you're the first through the fence or first through the wall, of course you're going to get bloodied. Yeah, and I certainly felt I was getting a little bloodied at that Oklahoma City event. But to your point, you know, it seemed like we built a little bit of a coalition coming out of that to shape it. But, you know, one of the big questions I wanted to ask, and this is probably a bit of a rhetorical question, but you'll see where I'm going. You know, like, who in the Army owns HR business processes?
Yeah, it's like, tough. It's really, really tough. You have a lot of the SIB chiefs, the MSAC folks, those senior NCOs at the state level who are the technical folks who really made SIBPERS sing. But you got to try to convince the officer branch that they've got to look at everything they do and remap out their life. And we still struggle with that today, a year and a half in.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's clear. Hey, Lee, what do you think? You're an active duty guy. Who owns BPs in the HR space?
I would say very unclear. But a wise old man once told me that integration does change things. A little bit of, I don't know who the wise old man was. The wise old man did say that. I think, just to use a very specific example, and I think Chief Blair and I kind of worked through this together. Very simple issue of just processing a separation for folks with disabilities, right? And there is actions that occur inside its day to have to do that. And there's also actions that occur outside its day with the IDES process. And we had to kind of re-educate folks of who owns what, quickly through a little bit of trial and error. But that's just one example. Going back to your question, sir, who owns the process? Frankly, a lot of people own parts of the process, and we need to reteach them the integration points to make sure the connective tissue is there.
Yeah, I mean, the synchronization of that is key, I think, as you guys mentioned. As I think of the whole enterprise Army, all right, the big Army up here in the Pentagon, it's not clear. It's not clear who owns the BPs. I know we were going through this process looking at using PeopleSoft, right, as part of this vehicle to drive a change in how business processes are being, you know, executed. And so, going to an event like Oklahoma City and then going into the SAT and the LEP, Pennsylvania in particular, we were using PeopleSoft to streamline, you know, these BPs. And then trying to build the foundation for, hey, all three components are going to come. So, you know, in release three, we're going to put the reserves and the active force into the system. So this bedrock of release two is really meant to, hey, let's streamline these 150 BPs into about 50, all three component based, and then drive everybody into the system. But, you know, up front, I think the, you know, the listeners can kind of tell, you know, it wasn't a perfect science in release two. It's, you know, we're bringing folks together. We're working through how things should work. But, you know, there's no one really, you know, rubber stamping BPs, you know, somewhere in the sky that says, hey, everyone's going to follow it this way. I think this is one of the biggest lessons learned I had in watching, you know, release two unfold, is that we probably need to do something specific, you know, tied to release three that really puts the spotlight on all these business processes and who in the Army is doing what task tied to that business process and how. So we have rolled out tied to release three, something we're calling HR transformation, where we're really more deliberately going through that and really highlighting what organizations are going to do what tasks tied to that business process. And then also layering in, like, if it couldn't be any more complicated, layering in all the other legacy systems that will tie into IPSA. And then how do you actually do the work in IPSA and then also tie to these legacy systems that you still have to use? I kind of feel we streamlined how we were going to operate in IPSA, you know, a bunch of change, but then it didn't really play out how we tied those legacy systems together in release two fully. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Josh?
I was going trying to find, we had this big line of effort. Lionel, you were there. You guys probably were both involved when we had the P3 cell, right? And it was probably right after user jury, before we're talking fall of 2018, when we had everybody down in Area 4, Fort Union, Tongass, from all over the place, trying to work on this P3 guide of, you know, this is what the system does. What are the, you know, policies we need to rewrite and the processes we need to define to use it, how we're all going to use it. And Lionel, were you there? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I was.
And we tried to, you know, really nail down to, like you were just talking about, the system owners, like FedRex or mobilization or whatever, like get the right person, even from within the National Guard, not the Army, to the gap for a week so we can all come up with a consensus of, you know, how we were going to standardize this process and then maybe in cases, you know, technically adjust the system to make users do it that way if possible. I just don't know, you know, how far we got with that, because to be honest, there's still a lot of processes I believe that were discussed that there's still no concrete resolution for, you know, Pennsylvania and Virginia still do it differently 18 months, you know, because there's been no updated policy guidance, you know, and there's been no, the system's not forcing us to do it the same way. So we're all doing it, and sometimes the way we've always done it. So still room for improvement, maybe R3, you know, R3 is going to be even bigger to standardize three components of the Army to do it the same way if 54 states and territories in the same component haven't come to an agreement yet. But I think we're going to get there someday.
Yeah. No, I, you know, for me, it's, this is a journey, but, you know, it's just, what you said is so salient. You know, PeopleSoft allows you to kind of execute a business process a couple of different ways, just by the way you can navigate inside the system. So, I mean, that's, you know, very, I would say efficient on one sense, that, you know, the system just allows you to do it. It's flexible in that regard. So if you process information a certain way, there's a way to navigate and to execute in the system, you know, based on your roles and permissions, you're able to update certain things in the system, where if you're a lower, you know, you have a lower level role, you can't. So some of that's just hard baking in the system, that flexibility, which I think we're comfortable with. But, you know, back to the, you know, hey, how do you streamline, you know, policies? And so that's also, again, one of these lessons learned as we saw you guys do this effort. You know, I forget what the P3 cell was called, you know, policy and procedures, and I don't know, there's another P in there. But, you know, that effort really didn't finalize, you know, its work. So in release three, we're like, hey, we have a formalized, we call it LRP working group. So laws, regulation, and policy. You know, we identified, I don't know, 80 some odd regs, policies, et cetera, that need to be updated and changed. And then there's a whole series of forms. You know, like the DA-31, you're going to leave in release three, the DA-31 is dead. There's no more DA-31. You know, in theory, you can kill the 4187 in release three because you can do PARs in the system. And then we're trying to formalize those processes, you know, holistically. So we're going at it in a more structured way, a more formalized way, with an out brief that lays it out. But then after that concludes, we really have to then go down to almost this TTP level, right? This procedures level that, you know, I think you're getting at to a certain extent. How do we streamline, you know, the you two states, Virginia and Pennsylvania, with, I don't know, some active duty division, you know, the best division in the Army, the first ID. Chief Blair.
Sir, so I'm going to use your own bullets against you, right? So you talked about the lead form. Who in HRC, whoever is helping at the HQDAG1 level, right, is writing the flag regulation? Who's rewriting the leave regulation? Like, how do you run a flag report? How do you process leave from start to finish using IPSAE in T minus 14 months, right? You need a functional person from IPSAE. You need a policy person from those, you know, higher level entities, whoever owns that. And then you're going to need some, you know, some smart brigade division level folks to say, all right, this is how the program is going to be managed from a large organization standpoint. So like all those things, you know, kind of have to start being tied together.
Yeah.
And then also, like, you know, NGB has a leave tracker that all AGRs use. What happens on day one of release three? Does that thing just go down? I'd venture to say probably not, right? There's probably some contract law stuff going on there with that system owner. And there's some other pieces to every puzzle. And that's part of change management is, are all the right people at the table to really mastermind just that one little thing? Hey, we're going to do leave forms at IPSA. I mean, IPSA is going to provide a capability to do leave on day one, but what does day one really look like? And that's what I still struggle with in my state is 18 months in, IPSA provided a lot of capability, but until those people that own or at least have a hand in the process, a bigger hand than most, really go in and rewrite and revamp what A to Z looks like, change doesn't really happen. It just kind of sits there.
Well, it seems like some sort of change happens, but not the end state that you really want. But you know, back to your comment, you know, that I think that was the very lesson learned that I saw unfold in release two, is that we didn't formalize it. So now we formalized it in this LRP working group. So the leave reg, the flag reg, the orders reg, all of those regs are in those 80 regs that we identified. And then we have a scorecard that goes up to, you know, obviously I gotta send all these scorecards all the way to the vice. There's so much senior leadership oversight of our program. But that you know, HRC and DMPM are usually the biggest two DMPMs in the G1. They own the most policy and regs tied to HR. That, you know, so now there's a scorecard that says, here you go, you gotta update these areas, because those are some of the clearest changes you'll have in IPSA, is some of the baseline actions, baseline strength accounting, duty statuses, baseline leave stuff, orders. You know, all of those are very easy to see that change, forms change, even approving authorities to a certain extent change. So that HR transformation group that's running the LRP working group and running these BP maps, we'll end up running what we call HR summits in you know, the early 21 timeframe to really lay all this out. Hey guys, here's all the regs that change. Here's all the forms that change. Here's how the BPs and how folks are supposed to act in the system tied to these legacy systems. So we're going to take a shot at that. But, you know, okay, I'll throw the curve back to you, but I know you're going to hit it. You know, of course, I don't think we have enough focus. We have a core team that's focusing on it. We probably have a half dozen folks. And then we're pulling in all of these other, you know, entities to, you know, update these different areas. But, you know, the short-term win, again, if I tie it back to Cotter, you know, the short-term wins is like, hey, we fielded and we did some of this work. And then I think we're headed towards, you know, just consolidating that gain, but you can't let up. You got to keep going back at it. You know, Lee, maybe you can talk a little bit. I mean, I've given you some kind of express guidance on, you know, how do we go back at some of this stuff in release two with our, and try to have that discussion and solidify some of the change. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Roger, sir. I think, you know, in fact, we just met on one of those areas, and that's promotions. In fact, took a lot of look at the processes, specifically from the state of Virginia, because they kind of embraced that part of the IPSA capability full tilt. But some of the same points that we're talking about become illuminated when you get into a large group. Even the reluctance from folks in the National Guard Bureau to, you know, put together an issue guidance on how to do things, and how to do that in in a form that all 54 are gonna play ball with. I think, but part of that is also in lack of understanding of the operational environment too. Like, what do these business processes really look like? So that's kind of step one, just understanding our environment, which we're endeavoring to do right now with that specific entity. But you have different points of integration there as well. So some states utilize different functions of the IPSA capabilities to do promotion. PeopleSoft allows you the flexibility, as you stated, sir, to pick and choose what actions you want to do where. And they have different outside the system capabilities, whether it's an actual IT system or just a business process that they're used to doing in the state. So I think you have to lay all that out. And we're working with the Bureau that, hey, let's just understand the operational environment. And yes, I think we do need to get to a point where, official guidance is issued to help steer and help direct folks on what the change looks like and what they need to do.
I mean, there's a lot going on. We're even typing right now, right? We're typing and working while we're doing the podcast. I mean, I'm impressed you guys just keep getting this stuff done every day, in and out. Hey, Josh, from your perspective, what did you guys do to combat some of the fears inside the state, before going live? I know this was a lot of the talk moving forward was, hey, I'm just not comfortable. I would say a lot of people were just, we were really changing how people had operated for a while, with this new system. If you use the old system, you get it, you understand how the hot codes work, all this other stuff, and then you come along with PeopleSoft and you got to learn. What did you guys do internally to PA to address some of that?
Yes, sir. So at the lower levels, this was pretty easy, talking battalion and brigade and division. Fairly easy. They're kind of tied because the system they were going to use is going away and they're going to have a new system. And if they want to do HR transactions, they need to get IPSA access to the training and use it. Like it or not, they're cornered. So a lot of the friction we had was at the acceptance level. So, my former boss, Colonel Cooper, the G1, the leadership of the Command Group of Pennsylvania, to include the Adjutant General, we had the functional readiness scorecard for LUT, which we basically broke into about 14 categories of, green thumbs up to amber to we're getting there to red, this is really broken and something needs modified to fix it. And so we ran this, scorecard probably on a daily basis as we went into the fall of 2018. Some went pretty quickly. The ones that Lee just talked about, like officer promotions and personnel security, access control and monitoring was pretty defined and, good enough. Was it perfect? No, but it was good enough for us to be comfortable. One of the things that, looking at an old scorecard I have in red was, the enlisted promotions process, like out of the gate, like that was the one lagging behind, whether that was decentralized promotions and how they worked or mm-hmm. some other things. Not sure, but, we would do this at least on, a weekly basis at a minimum. And then focus energy at, some of these problems. And by, our decision to go live in January, a lot of these were not perfect, but, good enough. A lot of time and energy in the sessions. And I think Lee was, really there in the sessions and how cumbersome that was, and the word was on the street that Pennsylvania used to do 20 sessions a day and now they can do 3 because it takes 2 hours to do 1. A lot of fear there, but, we tightened things up, made it a little more seamless to execute the sessions. And then, sure, we used to do 20. Now we can do 10. That's satisfactory for us. And we greened that one up that we could operate under those conditions. But that's what we did in Pennsylvania.
I mean, just a couple of things that's always impressed me with the rollout is that, you guys were working in the SAT and the LUT, and then we were updating the product as we went. And then, over the last year plus, a lot of upgrades and defects fix and, making some of these processes work a little better in the system. We've been able to do that with Lee's team and you're in Lionel's focus on, just feeding the program information on how things were kind of operating. I think that's been a huge game changer or just helping us to solidify the gain of, hey, we got it out. But you're helping to fix and update these business processes, as we're going. and really key for us. You know, one other point I would make, and you know, we're starting to see it already in release three prep, right? So we've built release three, right? We did a CDR, critical design review, finished in November. We're sitting here almost the beginning of October, and release three is built, and we're in this, you know, initial stages of tests. We'll end up doing our own SAT and LUT next year. HRC, the Human Resources Command, will be, you know, one of the entities that's fully involved in our test. And, you know, we're right at that point with HRC that I think we were in the Oklahoma event with release two, where we're just getting all kinds of rocks thrown at us, because they all know we're taking down a lot of their systems, and then their processes will have to change. And there's this healthy level of fear at the unknown. I think we're right kind of at that same spot right now. You know, and our countdown is maybe a little longer than what we had at the Oklahoma City event, right? So we're at about 15 months before going live now. But, you know, Chief, what would you recommend for me? And I'm going to ask Lee and Josh you this question. What would you recommend that I do help smooth out some of that friction we're already starting to see from some elements in the Human Resources Command?
That's a very, very good question. I think one of the advantages of the Guard is we get to segregate the conversation to a 7,000 man organization. And I know the folks in the G3. I know the folks in the G6, the G2, that's security, right? So it's easy for me to go collaborate with folks and develop solutions. You're going to find some unknown situations or not really foreseen. A quick example of that is, you know, in the Guard and Reserves, there's probably a lot of soldiers who don't have their families in deers because they don't get benefits. If I live 4 hours from a deer site, I don't have my family members in deers. However, we used to process 5960s for PH based on you having just source documents. Well, now with IPSA, You can't process a PH form without having your dependents in peers. So that's a change. But how do you get someone at HRC to see that gap in the process, and make sure that that is trained on day one and outlined? You know, Major Backlars helped scope that out and has put together some amazing training aids. I have it five times over. But I have 300 HR professionals scattered around my state that every time something changes, or even something that's just been in place since we went live, how do you communicate that to all your system users? You know, all of them don't read the notes. And then a lot of them can't see or can't visualize the whole process from start to finish. So I would say throw some functional folks with really some decision makers. And start testing. I mean, give them access to what you have and let them, you know, give them a task to look at something. Hey, see if you can do this from start to finish. Here's three pseudo accounts and record how you got there. But again, there's going to be some unforeseen things you aren't necessarily ready for. So you need some very knowledgeable folks from probably the SSI down at Fort Jackson, as well as some folks out in the field, you know, taking down 5 meter targets everywhere.
Yeah. No, I think that's sage advice. You know, one thing I just wrote down, because we're having this discussion right now, you know, the whole idea that people can't visualize the process from the beginning to the end. I mean, it goes back to that question about BPs, like who owns these BPs in the HR community? What you find is that most of the stuff doesn't really exist. You know, so you go to HRC and say, hey, show me your BP from start to end, you know, and then if you can't produce it or you can't see it, right, then you have a problem as we just change things and then roll out IPSA. So one of the tasks that we have put on the table for HRC and our training team in particular is to say, hey, here's your end-to-end business process for today to do whatever it is, you know, strength management, awards processing, whatever it is. And then we're going to show how it transitions to the IPSA environment. So in one case, you know, you're using one system or one thing to give you an analytic but then you're doing, you know, the assignment order in Topmist or something. Well, that changes. Now you're doing both of those in IPSA. So we're trying to lay those out together and then run people through it. But the other point I thought you said was just, you know, the ability to go in and play around on a transaction and then record it and then show it, you know, that sandbox approach. That's really smart, Chief. I got that down as a task. Thank you very much. Josh, what do you think?
So one thing that popped in my head was a few things that we had tons of friction on in R2. And Erica Miller fought every time they were presented, right? And I think you're going to run into the same challenges. And one, and Lionel can back me up on this, soldiers changing their own address was a super point of contention, I think, at all levels of the Guard. Lionel, would you agree? Like, every time she presented, yeah, soldiers can change it, and it will affect pay. You know, Erica, you know, presented the facts that, you know, the highest level of the United States Army reviewed this. It is legal, and it is what we're doing. And eventually that faded away. Another one that comes to mind that still comes up is orders. Format, letterhead, signature block. You know, IPSA was pretty dynamic in saying that, I believe, out of the gate, IPSA didn't even want to have orders. You know, orders on demand, metadata, which as an IT guy, I can appreciate. But a lot of old school people are like, oh, absolutely not. Soldiers will lose their bonus, whatever, whatever. So you negotiated and you created orders. And then we continue to argue about their letterhead and what they look like and if the formats are the same. So I expect the same, you know, challenges there. I don't know if you have the, you know, let's call it pool for some folks. Like, Lee, you're from HRC, right, as a previous employer?
Been about 3 years there, yeah.
Do you think people, like, if there's a couple key folks who have a couple, like, branch-level pool to, you know, get them in the program so they can influence change, at least in, you know, you probably can influence change at HRC where you came from because they have a relationship with you and know you're going to deliver them a good product. You know, is it too big of an animal to do that with three or four key, you know, senior NCOs or, you know, mid-level officers to get them on the IPSA team to influence change at HRC as a known entity?
I mean, I would just jump in before Lee and say, you know, we've done some interesting things where we brought a few HRC employees under our team under a developmental assignment. So in a couple of cases, you know, like the lead for leave policy and then someone who's sitting on the infantry officer's desk, you know, that came over and did 4 to 5 months with us. And then they went back to HRC. So we've done some of that lower level stuff over the past, you know, 18 months or so. But it's a really good point. And, you know, the more we go to the right, the more functionality that you lay into the system, that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Lee?
I think one of the smartest things we did in release two, after we got fielded, was really making sure that we were tight our, you know, software lifecycle process and involving subject matter experts from across the field to be involved in prioritization of what gets done when, the design of those things, demoing them. And then obviously, and involved in our testing as well. So we have a lot of users right now that have access to tests and have tested some of our sustainment releases that we've done. And then, you know, to bridge that to HRC, what folks have been talking about, I've actually been involved with some conversations with HRC on this very point as we are helping them, you know, look through and redefine what some of their folks are doing today in the legacy environment and how that's going to change in an IPSA environment, especially in areas such as, you know, data error resolution. And then you could also put that on the bill pay side as well. But then also the capability areas and buckets within IPSA, whether it's assignments, marketplace, workflow, restrictions, onboarding, et cetera. And there are SMEs all across the building in HRC that own bits and pieces of this. That are absolutely essential for us to have as we move forward into R3 test. So those conversations are actually occurring now, ironically, as we kind of talk about this topic. And they're very much, I think, open. We've already got some buy-in from there. You know, so you talked about a guiding coalition of ownership before. And I think that's critical as we continue these conversations and kind of, you know, flesh out how folks can be involved, not only in the test, but obviously they're going to have a key part of, you know, the sustainment of the system as we go R3 and of course to release 4. So I'm pretty excited about that piece right there.
Frank, do you have any big questions for us? I know we've been riffing back and forth for a while, but I'm sure you got a handful of questions you want to throw at us.
So we've covered some very, very high level strategic army wide change management campaigns, theories and ideas. I did want to sort of point out that there was a lot that the program did on sort of a nuts and bolts level in order to get people on board. I believe you started the executive communication campaign, sir, where you're emailing different groups on a monthly basis. If they also established a closed Facebook group where people can go in, ask their questions and get real-time answers. I think one of the key takeaways from that is the whole National Guard philosophy in that case, which was neighbors helping neighbors. So as systems came online, they were actually able to help the other fielding groups as they came on board, and it became a National Guard team effort rather than isolated 54 states and territories struggling in the dark. So you mentioned that the program and that there was like a little bit of friction in the early days where you took some headshots. You know, first person through the door gets bloody. Let's talk more about that from subject matter experts that actually fought that fight. What do we need to do for Release 3 to help change the attitude of soldiers and institutions in order to make the Release 3 fielding as painless as possible? I'll start with you, Major Backlord.
Yeah, Frank, thanks. I think part of it kind of goes back to the point we were just having, which is including you know, keep folks in the change, making them accountable to the change, involving them in what is changing. I think that's key and essential. And so we can look across all of our stakeholders, not only, you know, within components and then also organizations as well. I think for folks to truly embrace it, they have to have skin in the game. So it is one thing to tell somebody to do it. It's quite another when they own it. So that's kind of, I think, my overarching comments on that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Lee. And it all, that kind of ties together. I mean, in Release 2, as soon as we really embrace the MSTAG and their involvement in shaping, you know, business process and functionality, all of that, we kind of transitioned very quickly to engaging, you know, that body. You know, on a very low level, you know, weekly email, you know, that body and then state G1s, hey, this is kind of status. This is what we're doing. This is the feedback. And then we actually started to also, you know, parse out some of the different, stakeholders. So in the Guard, right, there's a thing called the USPFO, which is you essentially your finance guys in the state. So we, you know, we messaged them specifically with, hey, this is how MilPay error resolution will work. And these are the business processes that tie into that. So we started to parse out the message just a little bit and then communicate some of the changes, you know, in those terms. I know in Release 3, we're really starting to broaden how we're communicating. So, you know, we're hitting the reserve component with a particular message every month. We're hitting active duty HR professionals with a message every month. And those are really highlighting capabilities and some of the changes that are coming. We've focused in on the AG warrant population to focus, you know, some discussions on analytics and BI and data correctness, you know, the tasks that folks need to do to prepare to go live. So we've parsed out some of those messages. Chief, what are your thoughts?
So we're really changing the Army for the specialists and the junior NCOs, right? Our senior folks are kind of more into the management that Change Champion Network y'all helped create a few years back, like, hey, who wants to be part of the Change Champion? I kind of pushed that back out in terms of my state and ping my NCOs direct. And a lot of them came back like, all right, sir, I'm with it. Let's do it. When we cut over to today, I want to be a part of this. And even to this day, you know, hey, Chief, I think I figured this out. Can you come check this? Some of those soldiers are getting excited. You know, ultimately, they're being held accountable for reporting, actually executing these actions, et cetera. Getting them involved early, they're passionate. They want to help soldiers, and they want to do their job well. They're still looking at their career. So really focus on those folks. And at the staff level, for me, it was really about demonstrating dependency, right? Some people think, I'm not doing that. That's dumb. I'll do it my old way. Well, in an IPSA environment, you have dependencies, right? When you're truly integrated, there's dependencies. Example, an officer promotion, in IPSA, you have to go to a FedRec 3 and update that before you actually promote the officer. So it's two pieces of a pie. Well, if you're tone deaf to that fact that's in the user manual, or if you haven't reviewed it, or you don't know what you're doing, you're going to be promoting people and the transaction's not going to actually go anywhere. It's not going to go to pay like you thought it did. So you can't have blinders on to how things work. So I really had to focus on, and I continue to focus on as people change out, is demonstrate those interdependencies in the actions that we do. Those are really the two big things. First out the door, you know, trying to change the farm thing. And the third tier to that really was, how do you document all this and solidify for the whole state? Like, there is no regulations on how to use this thing. The user manual does pretty good, but you're really talking about every possible amalgamation of HR business. So I really try to put that all together in a document for my state. And I'm really hoping HRC gets, you know, kind of like the mobilization guidance that comes out, or the DAPAM 611-21 that's electronic, you know, something that's malleable and can keep up with the pace of change.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, as we promote Lee to Colonel, he'll be running all of that at HRC for us.
I like it.
And now, just thinking through Blair's comment about, you know, how do we keep pace with change, you know, I think that's another thing we probably need to look at too. We've experienced in IPSA how fast we can react from a software side to implement stuff, which has been exciting. But then on the back end, you know, folks in the state like Ash and Chief Blair are waiting for, you know, the black and white pages to be updated. And that takes time. And I think our process to update regs is a little probably archaic as well as we move into this new environment. Not to hype toolkits at all, but, you know, we've got to think about, we probably need to think through what other technology means can we use to rapidly apply changes to these things. And then where is that fundamentally housed as we move forward? Cause I struggle with that as well. And we still struggle with this. You know, how do we effectively communicate change to the users on the very micro level? Every time we do a sustainment release, there's release notes tied to everything we fix. You know, is the individual soldier really looking at that? Do they really even understand what's being said? Communicating and messaging that and what's changing. We think we're constantly in a fight, an uphill fight, making sure that information is readily available and that people understand it.
Yeah, but good points. And just to jump on what Chief said, I mean, I personally feel that, you know, the right place for this is as if it goes live, release 3, release 4, right? The whole system is going to be housed in HRC for sustainment, long term, top of the system, payroll, HR, talent management. So I think there's a lot of, I mean, it's just a great comment from Chief that, you know, hey, the flexible user guide. And then I would lob the BPs there, right? So you don't have anyone leading it today. I think through our team's work and through the integration of the three components, I think, you know, the rightful place that it lands is an HRC tied to the sustainment cell as you move forward, because all HR BPs are running through IPSA in one form or fashion or another. I mean, there's virtually nothing in the hire to retire HR enterprise that's not touching IPSA in some some way. So I think that kind of ties in there, you know, long term.
So, can I inject for a second? Because you're bringing up a good point, which is about, it's part of the change strategy. Some people at the senior staff levels don't understand what users are experiencing. And they're making soldiers go back to archaic means to produce an end. We're still submitting PQRs, you know, to NGB to finalize a task. And it's not throwing stones at NGB, but we're going back to something that's going to be subsumed, RCAS. And you're basically, a PQR is a data point. Well, the data point's in IPSA. If we're all truly in IPSA, why can't you look at the data point live in the system? Why make someone go to a whole other system, reproduce a document that may or may not be accurate because that system has data quality issues itself, right, to finalize an action? So we're increasing the business process timeline. We're creating more inefficiency the longer it takes to get everybody migrated to a new way of doing. And that's, I think that's the key point of change, is we also have to look at efficiency in what we're asking for in the change. We got to make sure that we're still maintaining some level of efficiency, because test time on HR actions will dramatically increase if you don't give that some credence. It's definitely increased in a lot of our areas.
Yeah, great point. It kind of shows that you need change champions even after you field. So folks understood that, hey, most of that information is in the profile of, you know, whoever you're talking about. Then you don't ask for the, you know, the old school PQR. I know we were asked that question in the live training event that we did yesterday. You know, we showed a bunch of functionality for talent management. Someone wrote in the comments, hey, are you gonna replicate the PQR? We just kind of said, you know, no, but the data, you know, sit in the system, and you'll be able to ad hoc query a bunch of different things. You know, you'll be able to answer that question, but not using a PQR.
Sure, sir. One of the things that I wanted to point out, that one of the things that the IPSA program did to sort of pivot during the COVID-19 outbreak is that the program has changed how it delivers its products and its training as a way to sort of sustain the momentum through podcasts like this, videos, personalized phone calls, demo videos. We've tried every virtual option possible. And so in order to affect change, there needs to be a conversation between all levels of the organization. And I think you've seen a few examples here today of how that works. And more importantly, for our listeners out there, if you'd like to get involved in IPSA, or if there's something that you're passionate about, we're prepared to take your feedback and find ways to work on it. And more importantly, we'd love to get you involved in the change management efforts, both at a high and a junior level within all the various Army organizations. Please follow us on social media. Thank you for listening. And this has been the IPSA podcast.
Soldier, right job, right on time. 24/7, 365.